2002 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents session number 302, A Listening Heart, a devotional given by Francis Lee Menlove.
The moral to the story shifted, depending on the lesson Granddad wanted to stress, but the story was always the same. The story takes place in Logan, Utah in the early 1900s. One Sunday, Granddad sat in church toward the back. He watched the young deacons pass the cup of sacrament water down the row, each person taking a tiny sip and passing it on. He knew Sister Brown, sitting in front of him, had tuberculosis. After church, Granddad would say, he went to see the bishop. He explained how unsanitary it was to have people drink from the same cup. He gave the bishop a mini, or perhaps not so mini, lecture on bacteria. Germs are spread. Diseases are transmitted. Brother Greaves, the bishop cuffed, do you really think that God would allow his sacred water, which has been blessed by the priesthood, to cause disease, to make people sick? Bishop, Granddad replied, do you really think that God would have given us brains if he didn't expect us to use them? Finally, the bishop admonished my grandfather to go home and repent. Granddad's reply to that suggestion was a resounding horse feathers. The story doesn't end there. Granddad enlisted the aid of his friend and fellow scientist, Apostle John Witzel. The practice was changed. Individual cups replaced the common cup. Now, if my granddad had had who had a vocabulary at least as spicy as J. Golden Kimball's, was disgruntled about something going on in his ward, he would tell this story, and the moral would be, men in authority are often jackasses. On another occasion, in another mood, he might say how good the church is at eventually righting itself, with the help of heroes like Apostle Witzel, and not incidentally my grandfather. But the most frequent moral of this story was, never let obedience trump conscience. In the final analysis, follow your conscience, always. There is a need to have an informed conscience. Don't just call any impulse your conscience and plow ahead. But finally, always follow your conscience. To do anything less would be to deliberately take an action or accept a proposition which you believe to be wrong. Loyalty to a country or a church is never uncritical loyalty. Sometimes, in the interest of truth, criticism is not only justifiable, but morally required. Never let obedience trump conscience is a maxim that has stayed with me. In its best moments, I believe, this is also the position of the church. I believe it is part of wisdom. Solomon was noted for his wisdom. The Bible has a lot to say about wisdom. One scholar described biblical wisdom as an approach to reality. Because life is ever-changing, and because few circumstances repeat themselves exactly, the wise are the ones with the vigilance, flexibility, and right thinking to meet life in all its contingencies with grace, compassion, and understanding. A couple of psychologists designed a test to see if they could measure wisdom, to see if they could differentiate between people who were singled out as wise by others who knew them. Here is one question they had on their test. A 15-year-old girl wants to get married right away. What should she do and consider? That's the question. How would you respond? Here's an example of a low-scoring response. A 15-year-old girl wants to get married? No, no way. Marrying at age 15 would be utterly wrong. One has to tell the girl that marriage is not possible. It would be irresponsible to support such an idea. No, no, this is just a crazy idea. Examples of responses that scored higher on wisdom are much more thoughtful and nuanced. Now, listen to this high-scoring response. Well, on the surface, this seems like an easy problem. On average, marriage for a 15-year-old girl is not a good thing. I guess many girls think about it when they fall in love for the first time. But then, there are situations where the average case doesn't fit. Perhaps in this instance, special life circumstances are involved, such that the girl has a terminal illness. Or this girl may not be from this country. Or perhaps she lives in another culture or another historical period. Before I offer a final evaluation, I would need more information. I need more information. This respondent listened to the problem, listened with her heart, and knew she didn't have enough information to make a judgment. In the spring of 1998, I spent 2 months in London with Jean England in the London Theatre Abroad program for BYU studies students. We attended classes, discussions, and saw almost 20 plays. One Friday evening, we went to see Sebastian Perry's play, Our Lady of Sligo, at the National Theatre. The stage was a room in a Catholic hospital in Ireland. May O'Hara lay dying. The conversation she had with visitors and with the nuns who were her nurses gradually illuminated her past and anguished present. In one scene, her condition had worsened and she could no longer leave the bed to bathe or use the bathroom. A nun began slowly and gently to give her a sponge bath. All the time listening to May carry on, her voice growing more and more labored. The nun washed one arm, then another, then carefully drew May's gown aside and washed her neck and breast and stomach. It was a deeply moving scene, a stunning portrayal of both compassion and suffering. I blinked back tears. The next day we gathered for discussion. One student immediately brought up the subject of nudity on stage. You know, she said, before I saw that play, I would have said there was never any excuse, any reason to depict nudity. But that was so deeply moving. A well-known and aging actress, gradually dying, allows her saggy breasts to be washed on stage. I feel like I know a little more about dependency of the old, a little more about dying, and I hope I have a little more compassion. I thought about the test of wisdom, about the person needing a little more information to make a judgment. I hear echoes of the wisdom of Solomon, echoes of a listening heart. I was part of the 60s idealism that generated dialogue in Sunstone. Striving for an open form of ideas, Sunstone fosters open, honest discourse. I treasure the open forum of Sunstone and the profound faith that allows questioning of the most deeply held areas of certitude. Throwing light into corners serves us all. It is, after all, secrecy that compounds the crisis in the Catholic Church today over the abuse of children. I'm grateful for our own light throwers. I am grateful to those scholars who protect us against the disappearance of the past by delving deep and presenting alternative narratives to those that have the sharp edges rounded off and the humanity of the participants submerged. Since the 60s, however, I have learned that it is not only the body that changes with age. There is also the relationship with God and what we mean by spiritual life. As I listen to my life, I find that God is less easily spoken about, more audible in the silence or between the lines than in theological formulations. I no longer demand, expect, or even want clarity. I relish the mystery. St. Augustine said that if we understand, then what we have understood is not God. For me, letting God be a mystery is a necessary humility. For me, a God that is not a mystery is a God that's too small. God said to Solomon, "Ask what I should give you." Solomon asked for a listening heart. He was wise already. He knew there was much he didn't know. He knew that the heart is at the center, open to the joys and pains of others. Perhaps he knew that a listening heart might comprehend and celebrate not what divides us, but what we share as a people of God. A listening heart is not quick to judgment. A listening heart does not cherish certainty over truth. I believe that homosexual orientation is beyond choice. In the spirit of my grandfather's admonition, I disclaim the church's position that puts our lesbian and gay sister and brothers on the margin of a faith with a stigmatized identity. I believe that women and men are equal in the eyes of God. I disclaim the males-only priesthood and look forward to the time when a more inclusive priesthood finds room for women. I cannot allow my conscience to avert its gaze. But I worry. I worry about how constantly we divide ourselves one from another by our opinions and our convictions. I worry about the many ways we find to divide ourselves between the us and the them. Jesus said, "I've come that you might have life and have it abundantly." He didn't say, "I've come that you might believe the right things." He didn't say, "I've come that you might be orthodox." He called people into the fullness of loving and being. Jesus did not call his disciples into a life of being afraid of religious differences. He never said that discipleship is defending right belief. A listening heart may save you and me from that terrible and dangerous arrogance of believing that we alone are right, that we alone can see the truth, and that others cannot be right if they disagree. Ours is not an absolutist faith. We are not in the sole possession of truth, and ours is not the only one and only pathway to knowing God. We humbly appreciate that whatever we grasp, it is only a tiny bit of all there is to know about God. We know that we must leave room for what we might know next. Like Solomon, we can pray for a listening heart. A listening heart is a humble heart, one that doesn't presume to know all the truth all the time. We may find that our shared humanity outweighs our differences. You and I may be able to listen to the truth in each other, to see in each other a beloved person of God. Then we may be able to do the same with others. I would like to end this sermon first by 1 minute of shared silence, a silent time to think our own thoughts and pray our own prayers. After that minute of silence, I will conclude with a quote from the ancient poet Rumi. Out beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there.
Well, thank you very much, Frances Lee Menlove. Beautiful devotion this morning. I love to hear talks from people who speak from their own experience, and we can all see that she is a person who listens from her heart, and she speaks of wisdom. If you want to see some more of her wisdom, pick up that latest edition. The article that was published in 1996 on honesty is relevant today as it was in 1966. So we thank you so much for your life and for your instruction to us and for your leadership. I guess we'll be dismissed. I'm sure Frances could entertain some questions privately if you'd like to come forward. Thank you so much.